If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.
This is LifeMint.com, and you're listening to the Mint Editors Podcast with me, Nandita Mathur, and Mint's editor, R. Sukumar. So the first story you're talking about is how Hike is in talks with China's Tencent to raise about 100 million, and you know what this means for the Indian market.
It's an interesting story because of two things. The first one is how Tencent's own messaging platform has done in India. They have a messaging platform that's called WeChat. That's obviously done very well in China. And they invested a significant amount of money in India, but it never really took off. Mm-hmm. In India, the market is dominated by WhatsApp. Yeah. Hike has done reasonably well. Yeah. It's an Indian startup, but I wouldn't, it's a very well-backed startup because it started by Kevin Mittal, who's the son of Sunil Mittal, who runs the largest telco. Okay. So it comes with various advantages, both tangible and intangible, very well-funded. Already raised around 90 million. Tiger is an investor. SoftBank's also an investor, I think. Both of them are investors. And so that's at one level. So hopefully, I think the thinking in Tencent is that this is a good way to combat WhatsApp in India. The interesting play is also how India is becoming the next frontier in the fight between the Chinese firms and the US firms. Right? I mean, we see it happening with Amazon and Alibaba. We are seeing it now in this area. We are seeing it in the fight between Uber and Didi, where the Indian companies... And I think it's good for the Indian partners, right? I think it's extremely good for Ola. I think it's extremely good for Hike. Of course, in the Alibaba and Amazon fight, we still don't know what is likely to happen. But I have a feeling that it'll probably end up being good for a company like Paytm, in which Alibaba has a significant stake.
So since we spoke of Amazon, the next story is also Mihir Dalal's... Where will Amazon spend its $3 billion? And it's announced an additional investment of $3 billion. But the company actually hasn't done any, you know, sales, let's say, since March.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't done any sales. But I think the Amazon story is interesting in India for a variety of reasons. Came in late, right? It came in when Flipkart was already... it came in 3 years ago. It just finished 3 years in the country, whereas Flipkart was founded in 2007. Mm-hmm. I think Snapdeal a few years later. So obviously, it came in at least between 3 and 6 years after its main competitors came into the country. Its competitors were fairly heavily funded. They benefited from the boom period in venture capital funding in Indian startups. That's a boom that has gone cold a little bit now. And we've carried a few stories on how even Flipkart and Snapdeal are finding it difficult to raise money now. But Amazon obviously has no shortage of money. So they initially invested $2 billion, which they've spent. They've actually ended up spending more than $2 billion. A significant amount of this has gone in sales. But I don't think sales is the only reason why the company has established itself in India. I think the reason why Amazon has really established itself in India is because they've built an extensive delivery network. They've invested in customer service. Mm-hmm. They've got a large number of sellers on their platform. So this whole thing of creating efficiency in the seller supply chain is big with Amazon. So you do that and then you provide choice to the customer and then you provide excellent delivery. And I think your sales are the icing on the cake. Now, you know, of course, that Indian rules, the new rules that India put in place in March for marketplaces seem to prohibit excessive discounting. I'm saying this because it's clear that there are various ways in which you can get around it, right? You can fund the sellers to offer the discounts and then route it back to them. I mean, there are a lot of gray areas in this. It's not particularly clear. And I fundamentally don't have a problem with a discount. If I'm going to buy a shirt, and which is going to be subsidized by a pension fund in California, I don't see why the government should have a problem with that.
Right.
As long as it's not predatory pricing. And I don't think you can call this predatory pricing. So what will Amazon do? I think they will probably do a couple of sales. But I think most of their investments, a significant portion of their investments, will actually go into increasing efficiencies in the supply chain of their sellers. Because I think that is the way in which you can actually build a sustainable competitive advantage. So it's interesting times in the e-commerce thing. And obviously, Amazon is none the worse off despite coming in late into this country.
Great. So moving on, the other story we're discussing is how HUL is splitting its food and refreshments business and what it will mean.
I'm thinking of, it's like nanotechnology, right? I mean, it's food for HUL is nanotechnology for the rest of the world. Nanotechnology for a long time has been the next big thing. Right, and without really becoming the next big thing. And HUL has been speaking of foods for only the last 15 years, saying we will focus on foods, it's a big market, it's a huge market for us globally, and we will look at it. All of it makes sense. Not really being able to make much headway with it. They have just one brand in their entire portfolio which does more than 2,000 crore in revenue, one food brand, and that's a tea brand, right, which is not strictly a food brand. So clearly spinning it off, especially given the dynamics of the Indian market. It's a huge market. HUL has extensive and excellent distribution reach. The urban market and certain segments of the urban market are exhibiting a behavior called premiumization, where they do not mind buying slightly more expensive products, right? And I don't just mean Magnum ice creams, right, from Walls. I mean the kind of staples they buy, they're not averse to shelling out a premium. There are certain even middle class households, because in India, you know, the definition of middle class is very broad. Everyone likes to think of themselves as middle class, but there are even some middle class households which buy organic food which costs much more than the staples that you get elsewhere. So I think it's a huge opportunity for HUL. And hopefully the restructuring that they've done will give them the kind of focus that they need to grow this business.
They also say that it's in alignment with restructuring with Unilever.
Correct. And globally, Unilever is really big in foods. It's really huge in foods.
So the next story is about IPOs, and about worth 6,000 crore are going to be launched in the next 2 months. And is this because of a strong monsoon season?
I think all of this is an indication of the gradual but very real recovery that we are seeing in the economy, right? I mean, you can look at it in many different ways, but the fact is we are better off than we were last year. And that's the simplest way in which I can put it. And if you look at it, in addition to these IPOs that we've listed in our story, which include interesting IPOs from companies like Ratnakar Bank and the Center for Sight and one of the GVK companies, I think Vodafone will finish its public issue sometime before the end of this financial year. I wouldn't be surprised if it happens in the last quarter of this year. Mahanagar Gas is in the process of announcing its IPO again. And again, it's a significant IPO. It's a good company. So you're seeing a diverse group of companies which are making public issues, which again bodes well for the broader economy. And I think that's the message that we should take away from this. Sure, things like the monsoon obviously matter, both in real terms and also in terms of sentiment.
So the next story is a tech story. It's the Wipro one, where Wipro is using AI, which is their platform called Homes, to do the job of 3,000 engineers, and how it's going to change sort of not only the company, but also the future of tech companies, because they're all going into AI.
They're going into AI and they're going into automation. And this is a big change in the IT services industry, because you know that when it comes to bread and butter application development and maintenance businesses, contracts, the clients insist on fairly low prices. Mm-hmm. The margins are very low for IT services companies. And the work is also usually repetitive and mundane. So rather than have people do it, it's far easier to automate it and get it done. And have your people do the more significant the more value-added work to do with cloud and digital and analytics and all of that. And I think that's what you're beginning to see even in the case of the Indian IT companies, because if you look at TCS and Wipro and Infosys, all of them have made significant investments in building their own AI platforms.
The next story is about the deal story which we've just done, where KKR India is investing in quality.
Yeah, it's interesting that we spoke about Hindustan Unilever just some time back, because quality, especially for people in North India, is a very familiar brand. In 1994, Hindustan Unilever, back then it was called Hindustan Lever, entered the ice cream business in this country by acquiring Quality's ice cream business. Quality is now, it's in the dairy business, and it's the largest private dairy. It's the largest non-government dairy in what is the world's largest dairy market. Dairy is a tough business in India. There are enough multinationals that have gotten into it and gotten their fingers burnt. It's a business that is dominated by cooperatives. And for a company to become a large private sector player in it is no mean achievement, which I think is what investors are looking at. And over the last couple of years, in fact, the dairy space has seen some significant investments. But Quality, because just given the size of the companies, will obviously be a sizable investment by KKR. And I think it's also an indication of the growing aspirations of the company itself, because they will probably use the investment to not just grow their existing business, but also launch a few new products and things like that.
It also gives a fillip to its own brand.
Exactly.
All this
exactly.
Funding.
Yeah.
The last couple of stories are on RBI and, you know, the inflation and how this inflation fight is supposed to be the toughest.
Yeah, because
so
the Reserve Bank of India, as expected, did not decrease the policy rate. And the reason it did cut is obviously because there are inflationary concerns. And there are inflationary concerns primarily on account of what is happening in the food scenario, but also otherwise, right? I mean, with growth picking up, there are fears that inflation will also pick up. So I think it's more of a... I would like to think of it as a transitory phase, which will probably last between now and September, because between now and September we'll really know whether the Indian Weather Office has got its prediction that this year we'll have a good monsoon, right? If we do, I think it will bring down inflationary pressures somewhat. It will also show us to what extent growth has kicked in and the extent to which it doesn't stoke inflation. So by September, I think the Reserve Bank of India will have a much better idea of whether it's got any more room to cut rates. But between now and then, I don't see them doing anything.
The last story of this week is about how public sector units are all set to kickstart the investment cycle.
If you look at the GDP numbers that came out last week, one of the interesting things is that consumption has gone up, investment has not kicked in, gross capital formation has not kicked in. And the reason it's not kicked in is obviously because there's excess capacity and all of that. I'm not convinced that there's excess capacity in too many areas, but we'll take it at face value. The private sector can't invest simply because many of them are still paying for their excesses of the previous decade. India's top conglomerates are loaded with debt and can't really make any fresh investments. Not right now, not for the next 18 months, I would think. In the interim, I think it is up to the state-run companies to really make investments. Mm-hmm. They're all cash rich. And our story looks at how the top 10 state-owned firms are investing around 1.35 trillion. And of course, a lot of analysts we spoke to say that even this may not be enough. But I think it's enough from the point of view of kickstarting things, right? I mean, it will increase in demand for steel, demand for cement. Right? They'll need contractors, so there will be some demand that all of this results in. To me, the more important thing is to ensure that these investments are productive. I don't think state-owned firms should just go off half-cocked and invest imprudently. I think they'll have to look at what they're investing in. There are a lot of areas that they're investing in. It's not a bad time to invest, right? I mean, global commodity prices are low. It's a good time to build things. Clearly, labor is plentiful, because industrial activity has not picked up as much as everyone was expecting it to. So it's a good time to go out and build things. And I think what it will also do is it will give some buffer to the government because the private sector will take some time to start investing.
But why is the onus always on sort of state-run companies to lead this kind of a, you know, charge?
Because in a lot of areas in India, you have large state-run companies, right? And they have the money. And their financials are in far better shape than the private sector's financials. None of them went in for excessive expansion or acquisition in the last decade. And they're there. I think everyone would be missing a trick if they didn't look at these companies, which are still, in some ways, engines of economic growth. And I think it's significant because, you know, everyone keeps speaking about the private sector. But I think it's very interesting that in this day and age, we're looking at state-run companies to sort of kickstart the economy. It just shows that there is a place for them. But obviously, the important thing is to make sure these investments are productive. The important thing is to make sure that even if they are state-run companies, they be run efficiently, effectively, with the highest standards of governance and all that.
So those were Sukumar's top stories for this week. Do let us know what you think. You can email us at feedback@livemint.com or follow us at LiveMint on Twitter and Mint on Facebook. Thank you for listening and see you next Friday.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.